Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me are Mike Tagliere and Kyle Yates. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80, at Mike Tagliere NFL, and at Kyle Y NFL. Guys, you remember that time when we did that 10-hour live stream and talked about fantasy football like nonstop for a full day? That was crazy, right?
I'm so tired.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dan. I'm ready to do another 10 hours today, buddy.
We're legitimately talking before we start recording about, like, what day is it? Where are we? What are we doing today? I mean, that was a ton of fun. By the way, just to be clear, if you missed the live stream, or even if you caught it, you want to watch it again, youtube.com/fantasypros. We've added chapters to it, so we add on guests all day long. So, like, legitimately, you're like, oh, I want to hear what they talked about with Sean Corner. You can just see on the bottom scroll bar, go to Sean Corner's segment, go to Jake Seeley's segment, go to Jimmy Eisenberg's segment, Andy Barron's segment. I mean, you can go right wherever you want to go. Just, again, click on the fest, start it up, and you can go immediately to a new segment. Guys, we've got a rankings disagreement show. So, I mean, I don't know. Am I going to get feisty tags on this one? Or did he, you know, is he spent from last
night? Dude, I'm well rested. If you were to do one at the end of the live stream yesterday, you probably would have. Like, I was into it. I mean, I've done it. I don't know if I ever told you that, Dan, but I've actually done a 24-hour live stream before where I didn't really get off camera, I think, for more than maybe half hour. I had to eat something I didn't want to eat on camera. But so I'm totally ready. I'm not feisty today. I'm here to talk some football, argue with you guys about some player rankings. I mean, things might get feisty if you come at me incorrectly, but we're going to do our best.
Well, I have a feeling that our rankings dispute is you're going to come at me and be like, why are you so high on this guy? I'm going to say X. You're going to say something smart. You've got a stat for that. And I'm going to be like, okay, fine. I don't want to fight about it. I'm moving him down. All right. But I will try to hold my own and get some coffee. I've got some on the side here. But anyway, today is a rankings disagreement show. We are going to call each other out on why do you like that guy so much. We're going to do just a roundtable. We'll each ask each other about a couple of players that we think the others are too high on. And then something exciting at the very end. If you're on Twitter, then you probably already know Dr. David Chow. He's at Pro Football Doc. He was the longtime Chargers team doctor. He offers instant video analysis of injuries during the sports season. He's almost always right the way he's able to diagnose injuries just from the video. He's going to be joining us at the end of the show for a brief injury segment where we'll touch on some of the latest injury news. We recorded the segment with Dr. Chow separately, and Yates was not available for that, so that's just going to be me and Tags for that one. And it's Friday today as we record this, and you're going to hear Dr. Chow every Friday on this podcast into the season. We said we were going to be adding podcasts this year. That includes a Friday podcast where we'll break down every game, and Dr. Chow is going to pop by every Friday to give you the latest injury news and get you ready for each week. So make sure you hang around to the end for that. Now, before we get into the show, let's remind everybody about our monster giveaway: a signed Davante Adams helmet, a $200 gift card for Pristine Auction, a $200 gift card to Porter Road Butcher, a package of fantasy football goods for your league's champion and last place loser from Trophy Smack, and a 1 month subscription to Fubo TV. To enter the giveaway, just leave an honest review for our show on Apple Podcasts, take a screenshot of that review, and then also take a screenshot showing that you subscribe to our YouTube channel to qualify for the bonus prize, and send those off to contest@fantasypros.com. So I checked a couple of minutes before we started recording. We had 6,727 reviews for this podcast. That is amazing. You guys are amazing. Tags, I was on the show before I think even you were, by the way, as a guest, and I'm pretty sure when I first popped on, we had like 100 reviews or something. That this is nuts. 6,727 is crazy, right?
Was that a humble brag, Dan? That
yes, you were it on was, the show actually. Before? I always like to put you in your plays tags
you,
before
you
we
found
get going.
A way to get that in there. That's a fun stat for everyone. Dan was humble on this podcast, but he was kicked off, and that's why it took him so long to come back on.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's been a great ride, and it's only gonna keep going. But this contest is gonna go until we get to 7,000 reviews. And look, the reviews are when we're gonna end the contest, but if you want to support us, if you like what we do, that is really a very quick and very easy way. Leave a review for the podcast. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. This is why we push ourselves to the limit this year. That's why we are going to 6 podcasts per week in the season. That is why we are going to have coverage all Sunday morning long. This is why we're going to be doing a ton of live streams. It's because of you guys and all your support. So more than 6,700 reviews. Contest ends at 7,000 reviews. And if you want a bonus, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. If the winner of the contest of the giveaway is subscribed to our YouTube channel, he or she is going to win a bonus prize of a Zoom call with all of us. Or if you just want to kick me off and let Tags and Yates talk, that's totally fine with me. You can ask Tags to help you with your draft. You can ask Yates how he keeps his hair so good. Whatever you want to ask, that's a legit click of a button on our YouTube channel, and it helps us out immensely. And again, we're going to be putting out loads of videos, so you aren't going to want to miss any of it. For more details on the contest, go to fantasypros.com/contest. That's fantasypros.com/contest. All right, rankings disagreements. Let's get the start. Tags, why don't you start us off today? Which one of us do you hate more to get us going?
So I'm going to go right at Yates. While I'm sitting here trying to figure out why things are happening the way they are and looking at the list of players that we're going to talk about and that we may have talked about, Yates is probably closer to high school than I am to retirement. Like there's an age difference here, right? Yates is a young cat. And like he feels good. His body is in great shape. I'm be turning 38 next month. And, you know, Dan, you're 75, so you know as well as I do that, you know, every year that goes on, your body starts breaking down. And once you get over 30, it's like your body is not going to get much better after that. Yates, you have 2 quarterbacks, so I'll let Dan bring up the other one, but I'm going to bring up Tyrod Taylor, a 31-year-old quarterback who has not started a game in a couple years. You have him ranked as your number 14 quarterback. I'm just going to go ahead and let you explain yourself here, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is looking at Tyrod Taylor and projecting him to play all 16 games. If we look at Tyrod Taylor and we say, okay, well, he could get off to a hot start, good schedule to begin the year, but hey, let's say week 10, Justin Herbert comes in because they start to lose some games and they're going to make the philosophy shift towards Justin Herbert. Well, then I can easily adjust that in my projection template and Tyrod Taylor is going to come crashing down. He'll be like in my 20s, right? But when you look at Tyrod Taylor, and it's not necessarily looking at him from the perspective of a great passer, right? He's not going to put up incredible passing touchdown totals. He has good weapons, like for the first time in his career as a quarterback. So he could be someone who hits I have him down for 21 passing touchdowns, which is kind of where he's been. I think that was his highest total in Buffalo there a few years ago. So, but this is all dependent upon how important the rushing yards are for the quarterback position. And when we talk about Tyrod Taylor, even at 31 years old now, that's not super old, right? He's not 38-year-old Ben Roethlisberger or 43-year-old Tom Brady. Like, this is Tyrod Taylor who can still move at 31 years old. So I'm not projecting him to be anything like a 6.7 yards per carry or, you know, like a ridiculous Lamar Jackson type runner. But when we are talking about the rushing yards for the quarterback position, that automatically inflates you. to a top 15 if you're playing all 16 games. That's just a matter of what the quarterback position is for fantasy football.
If you were to tell me that Tyrod's going to play all 16 games, I'd probably be like, yeah, I guess I could see top 15. But I want you to know, like, the last time he played, obviously, 3 years ago in 2017. That's the last time he played meaningful snaps as a starter. And if you watch from 2015 through 2017, every single year, his rushing attempts declined, even though he played more games. 104 rushing attempts, down to 95, down to 84. Here we are 3 years later. We could see that number dip down to 75. And he's a guy that, again, you saw his touchdowns decrease every year. 20 passing touchdowns, 17, 14. I wouldn't say that he has the most talented wide receiver core in the league. I mean, Keenan Allen is a very good football player. So I do believe that there is going to be some production there. Mike Williams is a guy who wins contested catches. I don't see Tyrod Taylor taking a whole lot of chances. But when you spend, you know, the pick that they did on Justin Herbert inside the top, was he the number six overall pick? Is that where you fell to?
Yep.
Wow, it seems like that draft was so long ago right now.
I know.
But Justin Herbert is a guy they clearly want to succeed. And if this team doesn't, if they don't get off to a hot start, which they can, they have a good defense, but Anthony Lynn hasn't exactly got the most out of this football team. They were supposed to be a contender last year, and they obviously fell off the face of the earth. So I think there's a chance that we see Justin Herbert take over half the season. And if that happens, obviously Tyrod Taylor. I just don't think you should be using a draft pick on Taylor. I think he's a streamer. If you want to use him for week one, they are playing against the Cincinnati Bengals in week one. That's a good matchup. So I was honestly wondering if you were going to use that as your argument at number 14, because I would draft Tyrod Taylor before I would draft someone like Daniel Jones right now, because Daniel Jones, there's no chance I'm playing him in that first week against Pittsburgh.
You look at Taylor's early schedule, Bengals, Chiefs, Panthers, Bucks, like that's not bad. I'm not going to be drafting him. I mean, he's just not a guy who I am really probably going to be. I mean, at 14th. I mean, that's all. Are you willing, Yates, if you're in a 15 team league, are you willing to be like, Tyrod Taylor is my guy? He's my starter.
Yeah, I think so, because you're looking at that. Again, let's go through the schedule. So the Cincinnati Bengals, that is a matchup that they should win. And so then that presents rushing ability there for Tyrod Taylor. And again, like 250 and two and maybe, 50 yards on the ground. That's perfect for a fantasy day for a streaming quarterback. Then the Chiefs, they're going to have to throw the ball more. That presents some opportunity there for Tyrod. Carolina Panthers, they should easily win that game. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that should be a competitive game. The Saints. So I think they're going to be at this point of like 2 and 3 through week 5, the Chargers are, maybe they win 3 games in that stretch. And then look at week 6 on. The New York Jets, easy win. Miami, easy win. Jacksonville, easy win. Las Vegas Raiders, that should be a competitive game, but I think the Chargers can win it. Then their bye week. Then Denver and Drew Locke against this vaulted defense, that should be competitive. Buffalo, I think they might lose that game. So you're getting now to like week 13 against New England, and you're saying like, there's a very realistic chance that Tyrod has kept this team very competitive. They're not moving away from Tyrod Taylor as long as they're above 500 or 500, right? It's when you move to a rookie quarterback that is in it as inexperienced and as needs as much development as Justin Herbert does, that you then move towards the future, right? Because at that point, the GM is playing and the coach, you're putting him in to save your job, right? At that point. So as long as they're 500 and competitive, Tyrod Taylor is going to be the quarterback.
I think week 6 is the turning point. I think that's it. If Justin Herbert doesn't take over there, I think you're right. I think Tyrod can run with the job, but I think if they start out slow and if they win, just, you know, if they go start out 2 and 3 or something like that, they could use it as a reason to go to Herbert. And that's the difficulty I have. So I wouldn't take him over some guys that are guaranteed the job, because I think Tyrod at this point, it's like if you're in a 2-quarterback league, that's where you're going to be drafting him outside of anything more than a streamer. And I would just take someone that I know is guaranteed the starting job over him.
All right. Yates, go ahead. Call somebody out for being too high on someone.
Let's go with T.Y. Hilton, Dan.
And then you, out of curiosity, Yates, where do you have him ranked now?
I have T.Y. Hilton at wide receiver 45.
Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm a little bit higher, 25. So that's 20 spots. Now, you know, we've talked about this. We talked about this on the live stream. Go check out the part with Liz Loza, where we broke down a little bit of the Colts wide receivers. I know you love Michael Pittman, so I think this is, it's not about Rivers for you. I get some of the drawbacks with Hilton. He's 30, he missed 6 games last year, and I may have mentioned the stat before. Some beat writer who tweeted out, Hilton's production without Andrew Luck versus with Andrew Luck is just striking. With Luck, 80 yards per game, top 100 receiving yards, 34% of the time. Without Luck, Hilton's averaged 58 yards per game, topped 100 yards, just 14% of the time. I get it. I like Phillip Rivers. I've said that before. He's going to throw the ball downfield. He threw it at least 15 yards, nearly 22% of the time last year, much more than Jacoby Brissett. Hilton's average depth of target last year was just 10.1, down significantly from what he had been seeing. And remember, you go to last year, even with all of that, through week seven, that includes missing a game. So bear that in mind. Missing a game, wide receiver 21 in half PPR formats. Obviously, he dealt with a calf injury last year. He already dealt with the hamstring injury in the beginning. Sounds like he's fine. He's talented. He's got juice left. He gets, you know, over 100 targets easily. You know, he's more been around the 120, 130 range. So for me, Yates, is it just like, are you seeing this is going to be much more of a Michael Pittman Jr. thing and a Paris Campbell? Or, you know, how do you like that game and not like T.Y. Hilton?
Yeah, that's because I have Pittman all the way up at wide receiver 37. And I'm looking at him as the guy who is never coming off the field in this offense. I love his ability to transition to the NFL. I think he's going to immediately become the guy that Phillip Rivers locks onto. This is really just looking at the offense and saying that I don't think there's enough passing volume to go around. Again, with a 38, how old's Phillip Rivers now? 39 years old. Like a guy who, and especially for Phillip Rivers with the throwing motion that he has, as soon as your arm goes, it goes. So I'm not sitting here saying that even behind a revamped offensive line from, you know, what Phillip Rivers was dealing with in Los Angeles last year to now one of the best offensive lines in football, even with that in mind, I don't think that there's enough that Phillip Rivers is going to be able to do. And I'm not 4,500 yards and 30 touchdowns. No way. No way does he reach that. If that's the case, with Paris Campbell supposed to be breaking out this year, Michael Pittman supposed to be a key focal point of this offense, and then T.Y. Hilton now, contract year, this guy who is not the future for the Indianapolis Colts. He's often injured. This guy, I just don't see enough targets there and touchdown production for Hilton to be vaulted up in my rankings. So that's why he falls all the way down, because I do have Pittman ranked higher.
Tags, what do you think here? Are you down on Hilton? Are you down on Pittman? Are you up on everyone?
I mean, I'm going to take the proven production every time, and that's T.Y. Hilton as a veteran, especially with this offseason the way that it is. I mean, I would have been higher on some rookies coming into this year had it not been for the no preseason games. Like, again, Tua Tagovailoa was considered the whole tank for Tua thing, and knowing that he's not going to be able to play a preseason game, Herbert, some of these guys, no preseason action, that's massive, because they don't know the speed of the NFL game yet. Sure, they're practicing. They just got in pads now, trying to develop that chemistry. Learning a new offense, T.Y. Hilton obviously knows the offense. He could probably help Phillip Rivers understand it, be a reliable target, be where he's supposed to be. So I have T.Y. Hilton at wide receiver 30, so I'm definitely siding with Dan on this one, because it just takes too much of a leap of faith to think that Pittman goes there. I understand the track record with Phillip Rivers and who he targets in the passing game, but again, I think you're asking too much of a rookie. That when there's if it was a Terry McLaurin situation where there's no other proven vet on the team that's been a top 30 wide receiver, you could absolutely make that argument. But T.Y. Hilton has been, when he's on the field, he's always been a top 30 wide receiver. So I think there's little reason to doubt when he's on the field, he's there. But obviously there are injury concerns with him, and that's why he's at wide receiver 30 for me. So if you were to guarantee me 16 games for T.Y. Hilton, I think that he would be in the running for, you know, a top 24 wide receiver that I draft. But there's obviously no guarantee of that. He's on the wrong side of 30. But Pittman, it just comes down to the wrong. I like Paris Campbell too much, and I think that between those two, they're going to be battling for targets more than T.Y. Hilton's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I get the injury concerns, and I get that he's getting up there in age. I think he's entering his age 31 season. That's not that old. But, you know, again, he had dealt with the injury last year. He was limited to 10 games. The year before that, 14 games. Okay, I mean, that's not perfect, but it's not injury prone. Year before that, 16. Year before that, 16. Year before that, 16, 15, 16, 15. I don't really think, you know, I get sort of the soft tissue injuries, and I get obviously he's already had a little bit of the hamstring, but I'm not really that concerned about the injuries overall. I mean, I get why certain people would be and why you guys are. But for me, I do think that if he stays healthy, I think he's almost a lock to be the top receiver that comes out of the Colts. Now, I do like a bunch of them, and I do like Pittman Jr. I want to make that clear. But for me, Hilton's the guy. All right, before we keep going, guys, let's talk some Pristine Auction. You know they provide the helmets that we use in our giveaways, including the Davante Adams signed helmet that I just mentioned in the giveaway that we're doing right now. And I'm just going to put it like this. You might be saying to yourself at this very moment, I don't know. I don't really want new sports memorabilia right now. That's cool. Here's what I want you to do. Just go to pristineauction.com. It is free to register. Take a look around. That's free to do. Just look at one of the thousands of items that they are auctioning off that day. Or come back tomorrow. Look at the thousands of more items that they are auctioning off that day. And at some point very soon, you're going to think you're confused. Because autographed helmets, jerseys, and memorabilia of every kind cannot possibly go for as little as they are going, but then they do. And then they do again tomorrow. And then you're probably going to see a signed Allen Robinson or Kenny Galladay jersey hovering around $40 like I did yesterday. And you'll say, well, I mean, that's ridiculous. So you're just going to put in a bid, which is free to do, by the way. And also, by the way, your bid's a maximum. So you might put in a $45 bid. And if the bidding stops at $40 where you are, you pay $40. You don't necessarily pay your maximum bid. And then you're going to have yourself a nice signed jersey or helmet or football. And then your seven-year-old son is going to take your signed football and throw it to the dog who's going to chew it up. But it costs you $37.43. So, you know, if you're like me, you're just going to grab another one. Legitimately, pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Thousands of auctions, ridiculously affordable prices. It's free to register. It's free to bid. And if you want $5 in free credits, just use our code FANTASYPROS in the registration field when you sign up so they'll know that we sent you. Again, that's pristineauction.com. Go check them out. You will not be disappointed. Okay, Yates, you called me out. I'll call Tags out. Why not? Let's get him feisty.
Let's do it.
Tags, Christian Kirk. Okay, this is a good one. Christian Kirk, I have him at wide receiver 50. Again, these are half PPR leagues. Tags, you have him at 37, so a borderline wide receiver 3. Go ahead and make the case for Christian Kirk.
I mean, the guy saw 107 targets last year in 13 games. I mean, he's 23 years old. I think he might turn 24 later this year. So there's just a whole lot of projecting here in saying that DeAndre Hopkins is going to come and steal targets. Sure. But it's almost like that Stephon Diggs thing where it's like Diggs is going into Buffalo and people are saying, oh, he's the most talented wide receiver. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean you want to erase guys like John Brown, right? You don't want to erase Christian Kirk. If anything, I think this severely impacts someone like Larry Fitzgerald in the fantasy floor that he's offered you the last couple of years, because we all know he hasn't had a ceiling. But, you know, looking at Christian Kirk having the full year in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, knowing that they haven't had that offseason, I'm being a little bit more optimistic on the players that have been in the system rather than the rookies or the players that are going to new systems. We've obviously seen DeAndre Hopkins, like, you know, dominate with any quarterback they put under center, and that's cool. That's all fine and dandy. But let's not pretend that Kyler Murray is like a superstar yet. He can be, sure, but the guy averaged fewer than 7 yards per attempt last year. So it's not like he's a stud. But again, Christian Kirk, over 700 yards, 3 touchdowns last year on 107 targets in 13 games. That's a pace of like basically like 130 targets in a season. So even if we say, all right, we're going to dial that back, which we clearly are, because DeAndre Hopkins, you're not going to bring him aboard and not target him at least 120 times. I'm actually putting his targets right around the 130 range, which I think is fair. You might lose, obviously Larry Fitzgerald's going to lose a lot of the targets that he saw last year. He might be closer to that 60 range. You're going to get Kirk maybe cut back to around, I don't know, I'm going to say 90 to 100 targets. So getting him, it's 90 to 100 targets, a guy that has shown the ability to play in the football league. Obviously, he's flashed. Like, he had that, I think it was a 3 touchdown game last year, I think it was, where it was just like, okay, that's a flash of what we know we can expect out of him. I think he works better in the slot. And knowing that Kingsbury does run 4 wide receiver sets, you're going to see him and Fitzgerald in the slot quite a bit. And that's going to be a safety blanket for someone like Kyler Murray. So I think we're going to be moving on from Larry Fitzgerald and maybe more towards Christian Kirk as that safety blanket. He may not come with a sky high ceiling. I'm not drafting him, again, as a wide receiver 3 that I want to start every week. But if you're going into a matchup where the Arizona Cardinals defense has been struggling like they did last year, I know they've made some improvements, but let's say that it's going to be a shootout and you want to play Christian Kirk expecting 7-8 targets, I have no issue playing him as a wide receiver 3. So drafting him in that wide receiver 4 territory, it just feels right for an ascending player that knows the offense.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't really have a problem with almost anything that you said in that whole thing. I mean, I think it's just maybe a little bit more of how we look at it when you are a guy. And again, you're 37. So that's, you know, if we're talking wide receiver 4, I have him like a borderline wide receiver 4. That's more borderline wide receiver 3. And again, I don't really have a huge problem with it necessarily. For me, you kind of mentioned everything. He's not going to see, you know, his 24% target share again, obviously, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins added. And Larry Fitzgerald, I get it, but he's still there. He's still the safety blanket. I mean, Kyler Murray is already talking him up. Kenyon Drake involved the entire year. Kirk wasn't really kind of the guy who was targeted near the goal line for end zone targets. And I'm not reading too much into this, but obviously Andy Isabella is getting a lot of positive reports so far early in camp. So I think you mentioned it, not a huge ceiling guy necessarily. And I'm fine with that in that range. But then I want somebody who I feel like is a little bit more of a floor. And I just don't think that Kirk is that guy because of the fact that they added Hopkins. So, you know, I think in the end, really everything you're saying, because it wasn't crazy, because you even said not that high a ceiling, I think your floor for him is a little higher than I'm willing to give him.
So real quick before we ask Yates about it, like I'm gonna look at his ADP right now. I'm gonna talk about some players around him. I would rather take Deontay Johnson. I have Deontay Johnson ranked higher, but someone like Mike Williams going right around that same range. Someone like Jameson Crowder, Henry Ruggs.
Crowder, I'm
Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, come on.
Obviously, Emmanuel Sanders is eight times the fantasy. Hold on,
why is Emmanuel Sanders going before Christian Kirk and Deontay Johnson? That's a great question. Yates, what's your take on Christian Kirk?
Yeah, I have him at wide receiver 52. Because I'm looking at Larry Fitzgerald still involved in this offense, but it's not just a three-man group here, right? You also have Andy Isabella who's going to factor in. You also have Hakeem Butler coming off who they like. I liked him coming out of college. So I expect him, again, I have him down, Hakeem Butler only down for 40 targets on the year, so it's not like he's heavily involved, but it's enough to take away work from Christian Kirk. However, here's the other thing. Christian Kirk isn't exactly like super efficient. Like,
well, he was hurt a lot of last year, though. Yeah. He was playing through injuries quite a bit.
Sure. So, I mean, if you're looking just at the numbers, 10.4 yards per reception, it's not super great. A 62% catch rate, again, that's fine. And I think that can bounce back up. But the thing is, only three touchdowns each of his first two seasons. So he's not this guy who's just going to come out here. And especially when you have a talent like DeAndre Hopkins and a big red zone presence like Hakeem Butler, where Christian Kirk has to score on these long, you know, breakaway plays. So I think he'll be fine in like a full PPR format, but he's not going to be a touchdown producer. And that's enough to drop him down in my rankings. I have like Deontay Johnson up at like wide receiver 27 or something like that. Like I want Deontay Johnson over Christian Kirk like 10 times out of 10.
For sure. For sure. All right, let's keep moving here so we can get to as many players as we can. Tags, you have been called out for being too high. You can call out me. You can call out Yates.
I have. Dan, I think it's time that we talk about Drew Brees and your affinity for him. So go ahead. When you call someone out, obviously we're giving them a chance to explain themselves before we rag on them. So Dan, go ahead and talk about why Drew Brees you have ranked at QB9.
Yeah, I do have him at QB9. And I think you have him, what, at 13 tags last
week? I do. And I don't even know if I'd draft him there, to be honest with you. I might be streaming at that point.
All right. I mean, that's fine. So I'll preempt a couple of your arguments. No, I don't think he's going to have a 7.1 touchdown percentage again. He did have a 6.5 touchdown rate the year before, but I think he can justify being drafted at 9. If you give him essentially his career average, 5.4, I believe. I have him at around 5.5, so basically the same thing. Last year, obviously, you know, he averaged nearly 300 passing yards per game in his 10 full games last year, and he was on pace for nearly 600 pass attempts. We can say, obviously, Kamara was hurt, the running game wasn't great. You can revert him back to the 530, 540 range. They have a good defense. I get it. But even with that, I mean, he's probably somebody who's going to be going out there at about 4,300 yards passing. That's around what he was in 2017, around 30 touchdown passes, like no interceptions. Also, we don't talk about this that much. And, you know, it's not something that I'd love to jump in there and project, but he is going to sneak in a rushing touchdown or two, right? Every year.
Taysom Hill's there now. He's screwed.
He has had at least one rushing touchdown every year for the last 9 years. And Taysom Hill apparently is like 35 and he's been there forever. But he's averaged basically two rushing touchdowns a year for the last 9 seasons. He does that QB sneak where he sneaks the ball right over and stuff like that. Yep. He's got amazing weapons and Emmanuel Sanders, the best wide receiver that's ever been on the planet. No, it's legitimately like the first time I think he's had like just a legitimate safety blanket second wide receiver. And again, they do have a good defense, but they play a lot of good offenses. I mean, the Falcons, we've talked about how much we like their offense. We saw what happened last year when they played the 49ers, the Chiefs, you know, the Raiders, the Broncos late in the season when they get it figured out a little bit. The Lions can put up points. Basically, everybody they play except the Bears can put up points. So I think there just aren't that many guys who I'm willing to go in and set it and forget it. I realize the upside to be that like top two or three QB is not there with him. I get it. But for me, he's a guy who I feel like he is one of the last guys who I can draft and set it and forget it. But you don't view him that way and you don't even think you'll draft him at all, huh?
No, he's one of those guys that you're not going to win a fantasy league because of him, but you're probably not going to lose it either. But like, did you know a fun fact?
Do you have a stat for that?
Well, he has not thrown more than 536 pass attempts since 2016. Like that's four years ago. And Drew Brees.
But you know, last year, like I said, I mean, he played whatever.
Right, 11 games. But
he would have. He was on pace to smash that number.
But that's what I'm saying is that he's 41 years old. Like endurance is going to go down. Like, is it possible? The thing is, we have to think about in the realm of possibilities. Is it possible that he has a Philip Rivers type season from last year? Like Rivers was always an efficient quarterback. He was the type of a D-gaff quarterback. He was willing to throw it up into one-on-one coverage, and he didn't really care if he got intercepted. Whereas Brees is a different type. He's a different quarterback. He's going to check down a whole lot more. But Drew Brees' ceiling is probably QB7. 7, if I'm being completely honest. And that's why drafting him at QB 9 makes little sense, because the floor is actually like in that QB 18 to 20 range. If you actually look at it, I don't think he's an every week starter. If you look at his boom bust and everything in between numbers from the last 3 years, last year, we talked about his touchdown rate being the career. He had a career high touchdown rate last year. The rushing game obviously suffered. They weren't playing very well. The touchdowns are going to regress back to his mean. So he was a top 12 type quarterback 72% of the time last year. That's really good. However, in 2018, 2017, 46.7% of the time, 37.5% of the time. He's kind of like a Matthew Stafford type quarterback that had, he just had a career year in 2019 in terms of his touchdowns. So it skyrocketed those numbers and it makes people believe that. But again, Matthew Stafford, if you want to talk about him being like a guy that's going to take a step forward because he's still progressing in his career, he's still in the prime of his career, you can say that. Drew Brees is certainly going to regress. The question is how much?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I don't see this as a Philip Rivers year. I think Rivers is fine. I think Rivers had that year because his offensive line was completely shattered. And so he was just running for his life to the extent, again, he can run right, you know, on every play. And so it completely infected him. I haven't seen almost any drop off in Brees' play, like his arm strength, fine, not quite as good as it used to be. But I haven't really seen anything. So for me, while I agree with you, I don't think that the ceiling is that high. I think his floor personally is much higher, but let's move on here. I have been,
can Yates tell us just which side he prefers?
I have him at QB 12, so I'm like, I'm not going to draft him anywhere this year because he is going as a QB 8 or 9 off the board, but he's one of these guys. I agree with Tags's argument that he can probably finish in the top 12, but it's not like he presents any sort of ceiling this year, where I think you're going to see them lean more on the run game if Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara are fully healthy. That's going to take the ball out of Drew Brees' hands. And then you have Taysom Hill factoring into. It's just a situation I don't want to really touch.
Yeah, that's fine. Look, I'm going to take my Drew Brees and my Emmanuel Sanders shares, and I am going all the way to sixth place. Okay, let me call out Yates. Now, we're talking about quarterbacks who are starting to get a little long in the tooth. How about a little Cam Newton here, Yates? You have him 9th, I believe, and I have him 15th. So why don't you go ahead and make the case for Newton?
Yeah, it's just purely looking at his rushing ability. It's a very similar argument to Tyrod Taylor, that even though I'm not projecting Cam Newton to be anywhere near the type of runner that he was previously, you know, what we saw in 2015 or even later, it's just that looking at the competition at the position, right? If we talk about Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham, a healthy Cam Newton is not on the same planet that Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham are. So Cam Newton, I'm projecting to be the 16-game starter in this offense. They're talking about using a platoon at the quarterback position. Yeah, I'm not buying that for a second. So Cam Newton, healthy Cam Newton, I have him down for 116 rush attempts. It might be generous, but a lower yards per carry than his normal. But this is just a guy who I think is going to be utilized so much around the red zone. He's going to take away some of these red zone touchdowns from, you know, a Damian Harris, a Sony Michel when he's back and healthy. You know, these guys that Rex Burkhead, it's just going to be too much rushing production to ignore. And I think if, as long as he's healthy, there's a very realistic chance that we get Cam Newton back within the top 10 at the fantasy quarterback position.
He does have the upside. I will grant you that. You know, I think number one, obviously, we've joked about it a little bit, he probably has the worst set of pass catchers in the NFL, right? I mean, Edelman, Sanu, Harry. Now he's used to that. Kelvin Benjamin was his number one wide receiver for a while. So I get with the upside, especially their defense is probably going to be weaker than we expected because of the opt-outs, right? Like Dont'a Hightower and stuff like that. But, you know, he's got a rush. That's why, I mean, he's top 3,900 passing yards once. He's top 24 passing touchdowns once. He's got a rush. And yeah, he gets the 5 rushing touchdowns every year. It helps. But I think that's really, what do you say, Yatian, how many carries this year?
116. So his totals that I have for him, only 3,300 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 116 rush attempts for 580 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the rushing. I have 80 carries, 341 yards and 4 rushing
touchdowns.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Yeah, that's really the difference. What about you, Tex? Where do you come out on this?
I'm not going to own any Cam Newton. I understand why Yates wants to believe in him because, again, Yates is attached to these quarterbacks that, because Yates is like, hey, they're fine, man. They're coming back. But I think Yates just hasn't gotten to that age yet where his body is starting to break down. I have Cam Newton down for 89 rushing attempts, 427 yards, 4 touchdowns. And I honestly, my projections, I put him even at 24 passing touchdowns, which is actually crazy high. That's something
that is high.
Yeah, right. Like, he's only topped that number once in his entire career. So I was trying to be generous when I was projecting projecting him out because I am worried about his legs. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be a little bit pessimistic there, maybe I should be a little optimistic with what he's going to do through the air in a new offense, you know, under Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels. They've gotten the most out of most offenses. So, and he didn't even stat out as a top 12 quarterback in my ranking. So I think there's just too much risk involved with Cam Newton but I agree with Yates though, in the fact that where you're drafting him, to take the chance that he starts running the football again, I'm willing to do that. You know, that's the reason where he's going. He's going around the QB 15 in drafts right now. I'm okay with that. If you're going to go, let's say that you want to take someone like Matthew Stafford and then pair him with Cam Newton and say, okay, I have my steady quarterback, the one guy I know that's not going to lose me a fantasy league, but I also want the other guy who I have potential top five upside in. Cam Newton, obviously, like, he presents that.
Yeah, I've got no problem waiting and drafting him. And if I'm rolling with him, I'm fine, especially if you're in a league where people aren't drafting a backup QB every time. You know what I mean? If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But yeah, he does offer immense upside. So I am willing to give that. All right, Yates, I called you out. Go ahead and call somebody else out for being too high.
Tags, let's talk about Cam Akers.
Yeah.
So,
All right.
Let's talk about Cam Akers. I have him down at RB 42. You have him at RB 31. Let's just talk about this really quick. Looking at Cam Akers and for him to be ranked up in the top 30 or, you know, in that range where you have him, I think he has to be the clear guy in this backfield, at least from the receiving the majority of the carries. How do you see this backfield playing out?
I mean, I do believe that Daryl Henderson is going to be someone that they're going to see what they have in him. I think this is going to be a mixed backfield and they're going to see who basically is going to win that job. And I think there's a chance that Daryl Henderson does. And I actually think that he's the better draft value based on where they're going. However, I'm not going to say that I think they want Cam Akers to win the job. Obviously, they just spent the first draft pick they had in this draft was in the second round and they took Cam Akers and Yates. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're of the mindset that you believe the Rams are going to be running more 12 personnel this year.
Correct.
All right. Yeah, so if they are running more 12 personnel, that obviously takes the slot receiver off the field. It adds another tight end. And that basically means they're going to have an extra blocker in there for the running backs. I think Sean McVay is too smart to let what happened last year happen again. And the reason I say that is because he's a very young head coach. I've talked about this before. And it's the reason that I have a problem with teams hiring these head coaches that are so set in their ways. Guys like John Fox, when the Bears hired him, it was the worst hire of all time because these guys are set in the ways. They're not going to change their offense. They're not going to change anything that they do. They're just going to go out there and they think it's old school football. No, Sean McVay changes. He adapts to the game. He does it. His offense has never looked the same in back-to-back years. And Todd Gurley was breaking down. Like, he wasn't the same player that he used to be. And I'm not saying Cam Akers is anything close to Todd Gurley, but I think the risk versus reward is okay with Cam Akers right outside the top 30 running backs. Again, I don't think I've ended up with him on any of my fantasy teams because, again, if I have him at 31 or 32 in my rankings, his ADP is around RB 26 to 28 range. I'm not winding up with him because I would much rather have someone like Ronald Jones, who actually is the starter.
Yeah, I would co-sign basically everything Tag said. Again, I think Yates, I think you and I were on with Matthew Friedman yesterday on the live stream, and he talked about how much he loves Akers, right? I believe that he was talking about everything he liked, and you were right there with him. Yeah, I don't dislike Akers as a player. I like him a lot, actually, as a player. I'm just not going to get him. I have him 30th. You know, he's just not. I don't know how this backfield is going to break down. I have no sense, really, for the Rams and their backfield whatsoever. That's really all it is to me. It's somebody with the uncertainty. Where did you have him, Yates? Do you have him
42? So here's the thing. I'm leaning back on my film study, right, and studying Cam Akers heavily, both in 2018 and 2019. I think I watched like a total of 10 games on Cam Akers and his college film, and seeing that Cam Akers, from a vision perspective, constantly was looking to bounce to the outside. And now we can talk about how atrocious the offensive line was at Florida State, but even when he had huge openings in the line, there was a habit there that he had developed that I can't trust going in between the tackles. I'm going to trust my athleticism more than anything else. And I'm going to constantly look to bounce to the outside. Guess what? That's not playing in the NFL. That's not working. You're not going to be able to beat these edge defenders around the edge there. So what I see with Cam Akers is him sliding into more of this pass catching role and him being that guy in this backfield while Daryl Henderson works in between the tackles. Now, I could totally be wrong, and I'm going to be perfectly willing to admit if I just missed on Cam Akers, but looking at him, I just don't want a guy year one to step into what the coaches are saying is a committee approach and a guy who I liked in Daryl Henderson coming out. And then you're going to involve Malcolm Brown. They're even talking about getting John Kelly involved, and I like John Kelly too. So it's like all of this goes against Cam Akers to the fact that I think he can be fine in full PPR formats because I do expect him to be involved as a pass catcher, but any other format, I just don't want any part of him.
Yeah, I think where we all come out, and it's just that Yates is sort of, you know,
to the extreme.
To the extreme, which is none of us is really targeting Akers. He's going to go before any one of us is comfortable taking him in the draft. I do think that because of the upside, if he does manage to sort of break out early and he can take control of that backfield, it's, you know, despite the subpar offensive line, he's got a really, really high ceiling in that, you know, in McVay's sort of creative offense. So for me, I'd be willing to take him earlier than that. And I think actually earlier than you, Tags, right? You said 31?
31, that that's where I am.
Yeah, I'm at 30. So I'm technically the high guy on him. But again, I don't have him on any of my rosters or anything like that. He's not a guy who I've been looking at. All right, before we get to the next player, in case you guys missed it, sports back. And in less than 3 weeks, football is back. And that means it is time to start playing on FanDuel. You know FanDuel, you create a new team every game, different contests across all sports in relation to your skill level, super easy app to use. We all love our season-long leagues, but with injuries, sometimes slow starts, being able to have a new team each and every week is just the best. And guess what? New users right now can play for free the entire NFL season. No deposit required. Just sign up for an account, and FanDuel is going to give you a free entry to a contest each week of the football season where you can win real prizes. So you risk no money for the opportunity to win money. I am not a smart man, but that sounds like a good deal. And let's say you do want to make a deposit when you sign up. FanDuel has your back. It's offering up to a $500 bonus when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Just go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros or download the FanDuel Fantasy app to play now. FanDuel, more ways to win. All right, Tags, you've been called out. Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to go right back to Yates, and I'm going to bring up Antonio Gibson. He's got him at RB33 right now. If you're drafting someone at RB33, you're almost relying on them to be an RB3/flex player right out of the gate. And I'm starting to get the vibe that Antonio Gibson is this year's version of Mecole Hardman. And I remember last year, people were getting higher and higher on Hardman as the offseason progressed. And then we find out about the Tyreek Hill injury, and it's like, oh, wow, like he might be suspended. It's a guy that's never had, I think he had 70 touches or 68 touches in college. So he's never had that big role. And I'm just starting to worry. We're drafting him around where his ceiling is on a very, very bad offense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have him. I only have him down for 5 total touchdowns in the year. But you're looking at this offense and saying that the targets have to go somewhere. And are they all going to go to JD McKissick out of the backfield? No, I think Antonio Gibson is going to be moved around and utilized out of this backfield. He has the explosiveness to be able to capitalize on it. And I think that I only have him down for 104 rush attempts on the year, averaging 4.3 yards per carry, but it's the targets. It's the work in the receiving game that it's Terry McLaurin. And then are you giving Antonio Gandy-Golden a ton of targets?
Sims.
So that's the difference. That's the difference here is that up to this point, I have Steven Sims buried because I just think that they are going to utilize Antonio Gibson in this capacity more than they are Steven Sims. So this is one situation that I so desperately wish that we had preseason to be able to see, okay, who's going out there as the slot receiver? How are they utilizing Antonio Gibson? Because I am projecting Gibson to be lined up in the slot. In some instances, he'll be utilized out of the backfield. That's the thing. And if it comes out that Steven Sims is the guy, then Antonio Gibson's targets are going to come down because I have to give them to Steven Sims. So that's the difference here. I just have Gibson way up there from a target share perspective.
Can we get at the actual projections, if you guys have them up, for the number of receptions that you have Gibson down for?
63.
Okay. All right. And Tags, how about you? How many receptions do you have him projected for?
I mean, I have him down for 68 targets. So, I mean, I'm close in the range of targets and receptions with him. Those have turned into 52 receptions. So, I mean, I'm not as high on Gibson. And again, I'm just worried about this being a low upside offense. It's the same reason I'm worried about Terry McLaurin. I think he's a fantastic football player. McLaurin is. And obviously we've seen him targeted. I have him projected for 120 targets. So he's going to have value, but someone like Antonio Gibson, there's just too much projecting on a team that has legitimately very, very little touchdown upside. I mean, maybe when we talk to Dr. Chow later, we're going to find out something about Alex Smith and maybe he'll be ready. And I would actually have a lot more faith in someone like Antonio Gibson if we had Alex Smith under center. But Dwayne Haskins, I think that they would take a run first approach. This defense is actually a little bit better than people think.
Yeah. Okay. I think Tags called out Yates for being too high there. So Yates, You're up. You can call that either me or Tags.
Let's talk about Raheem Mostert, Tags. Just super quick here. I mean, we mentioned him on the live stream yesterday, so I don't want to spend a ton of time. But Raheem Mostert, you have him at 25. I've recently moved Mostert way down. And this is primarily due to the fact of looking at Jerick McKinnon has been receiving positive news. Now, I'm not projecting McKinnon to be the lead guy in this offense by any stretch of the imagination. But looking at Kyle Shanahan and saying that he could easily roll out Tevin Coleman, Raheem Mostert, and Jerick McKinnon, and these guys form a platoon at the running back position. We've seen him do that before with Coleman being heavily targeted out of the backfield, and that especially with who the heck is playing wide receiver for the 49ers this year, right? Like, I have no idea. And so looking at that, Coleman could be heavily targeted out of the backfield. And then additionally, Jerick McKinnon's a fine pass catcher himself. So as long as McKinnon's healthy, I don't see the upside there for Mostert to receive more than 180 carries. Yeah, he can turn those into, you know, 8 touchdowns easily. But even that, without, if he's not receiving the workload through the air, I just don't see him returning to RB25 value.
Well, I mean, you mentioned it. You mentioned 180 carries. I think that's his actual floor. And that's being pessimistic about it, because this is a team with their running backs last year alone had 424 carries. Like, that's a lot of carries. Like, I don't think people realize just how much volume that is going around. And can we project more pass attempts? Well, sure, but where are the pass attempts going to go? You just talked about the lack of wide receivers in this team right now, and we know how much success they've had running the football. Raheem Mostert is someone they took care of. When they took care of him with that contract, when he said, "Hey, I want to be traded," because he was frustrated. I think he found out he was going to have a bigger role, and then it was like, "All right, I'm making peanuts here. It's like, this is my chance to actually make some money. I want to be traded and to get another contract." And they took care of him. You know, they gave him a couple million dollars to keep him happy. He's obviously happy now. He's back on the team. Tevin Coleman, a lot of people view him as a legitimate pass catcher. He had 30 targets last year. What did those amount to? 180 yards and a touchdown. Raheem Mostert had 22 targets. What did those amount to? 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. Raheem Mostert is a better football player than Tevin Coleman, and it's not really all that close. So, and then, you know, losing Matt Breida, his 123 carries, his 22 targets. Am I worried about Jerick McKinnon? No. He was a questionable player before, like when they signed him. I hated the contract when they signed him. I thought he was a timeshare running back, but he hasn't played football since 2017. Raheem Mostert is a guy that he's going to see at least 10 carries a week, if not more, obviously from what we saw him down the stretch. And then obviously you have the upside of much more. So 10 carries a week is enough for flex type potential for a guy that over his career has averaged over 5 yards per carry, plays in a Kyle Shanahan offense. And then it's almost like the risk that he has, that he doesn't get over those, you know, averaging 12 carries per game or whatever. It's built into his ADP, because otherwise he'd be being drafted in that RB17 range with someone like Leonard Fournette. But again, getting him as your RB3 flex option, I am more than okay with that, because he will have somewhat of a floor, but the ceiling, as we saw in the playoffs, is massive.
All right, Tags, call out somebody for being too high.
Dan, I'm going to go ahead and call you out. And it's not something that I thought I would be calling you out for, because I am actually higher on Alan Lazard than most people in the industry. I have him as my wide receiver 58. You have him at wide receiver 47, telling me that you're okay rostering him as a wide receiver 4. Tell me and tell everybody listening why you believe that Alan Lazard is worthy of a pick. That's basically inside the top 10, 11 rounds.
Yeah, let's do it. First of all, do we all agree that he's the number 2 with Funches opting out? Or yeah. Mm-hmm. You agree with that, Tags?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Okay, we agree with that. So, look, I really wish I could see some preseason games this year, because I really want to see what the offense is going to look like, because I'm not a big fan of what Matt LaFleur does on offense, but I do kind of think it's a middle finger year right now from Aaron Rodgers. And I think he likes Lazard. He's always kind of publicly gone to bat for him. In the past, he has supported multiple wide receivers. I know it's a different offense, but he certainly has the ability to do that. Lazard isn't that fast, but he's big, 6'5", 230. He can win contested catches. He tracks the ball well. He was second on the team last year in air yards, yards per target, yards per route run. It's not as much about projections with Lazard, because frankly, I actually haven't even, I realize, updated the projections for the Packers since Funches opted out. But the bottom line is, I think that this year, the Packers offense is going to look better than it did last year from a passing perspective. I think he's going to be a fairly high floor option with a very high ceiling, particularly if Davante Adams gets hurt. These are my draft rankings. That's how I rank. We've talked about this a little bit. I rank in the way I would draft. And yeah, if you're saying, I mean, again, this is a borderline and within, but a borderline wide receiver 4. You're going to give me the second wide receiver pretty much guaranteed on an Aaron Rodgers-led offense in a year where he is probably pissed off to high heaven. I'm going to take that as a borderline wide receiver four.
I totally forgot that you were a route guy rather than a route.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Is the absolute worst, and you just literally just made it terrible.
My bad.
But two, I agree with you. I actually agree on a lot of these things, and I really do hope Aaron Rodgers does have a ticked off season, and he comes back and kind of reminds people he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time. You know, Lazard is someone that's earning the trust of Rodgers. Like, those two have a relationship off the field, and that's something that's important to Rodgers. And I posted a video clip of Rodgers throwing a route to Reggie Bagleton the other day on Twitter, and it was a thing of beauty. Like, Bagleton, he wasn't even cut on his route yet, and Rodgers threw the ball, and the ball, like, once Bagleton turned around, the ball's right there in his hands, and he caught it. And it was like, this is who Aaron Rodgers is. He's such a timing based quarterback that he's not waiting until you get open. He's throwing before you get open, and you better be where you're supposed to be. I think that's the issue, is that when he lost Jordy Nelson, he lost so much trust. He lost so much trust in this offense. And Davante Adams is the only guy that has it. Marquez Valdes-Scantling continually has not been that guy for him. He did not want to throw to him. Jimmy Graham's never a guy that's been able to get open. He's just more reliant on those jump balls when he was younger. So, Rodgers, I really do think that there's upside with Lazard, so I'm not going to disagree with you too much on this one.
Let me summarize it for you, Tags, because this is where I think you're coming out, and I have no problem with this. Lazard is a guy who you want to have, probably, if you can, on, like, at least some shares of on your rosters. But you realistically, when you're making your projections, you just really can't project him into the range.
Absolutely. Because Matt LaFleur, right? As I mentioned in the live stream, Matt LaFleur might be the new Adam Gase. And that's a terrible place to be.
A great line, by the way, and probably correct, unfortunately, for everyone else. But yeah, I think, Yates, be the tiebreaker here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything you guys said is correct from projecting him. I have him down for 87 targets, 55 receptions, 685 yards, and 5 receiving touchdowns. It's kind of the where I can find him, like find the work for him. And that's at wide receiver 60 in my projections. And that's where I have him ranked. But when we're talking about Alan Lazard, carries that additional upside where if something happens to Davante Adams, Lazard's the number one in this offense now. And it's like with Adams on the field, there's not enough work even for the number two in this offense, because Adams is going to see a ridiculous target share right up there with Michael Thomas. Like, it's just going to happen. But so that doesn't leave a ton left over for Lazard. But if something does happen to Adams, he can absolutely finish much, 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 much higher than where he's being drafted at right now.
Yeah, this is a guy, again, I haven't updated my projections since Funchess opted out, but he is a guy who I guarantee you when I run my projections, he's not going to quite be at 47. But he's a guy, again, we talk about this, when we're in drafts and we're put to those split second decisions of what we want to do, I'm almost always choosing Lazard higher than where he comes out necessarily in my projections. And by the way, just to be as transparent as possible, that is how I rank. I do projections and I do my first cut of rankings based on my projections, but I am willing to move off that a little bit within reason when I just sort of, either feel like if I'm in a draft, this is the guy I'm going to take. I need to let that factor in, because I think that's the advice I want to give, if you guys know what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, no, and I want to let's put a stamp on this and a closing book, whatever we want to do on this conversation. But I want to say a couple names being drafted in front of Alan Lazard right now: Hunter Renfrow, T. Higgins,
nope.
Yep. Larry Fitzgerald. Come on, guys. Yep. Come
nope.
On. Exactly. Alshon Jeffrey.
Right. Nope. That's ridiculous, obviously. But yeah, no, that's the thing. And I felt like every time I was there and I was looking for him, I just wound up gravitating towards him in the drafts. And I remember in Scott Fishbowl, frankly, Yates, I didn't even tell you about this because I know how high you were on Michael Pittman. I was sitting there debating Pittman and Lazard, and I was like, Pittman's got to be the guy. Pittman's got to be the guy. And then I was like, no way, I can't. I just want to have Lazard on my team. And that's in the end where I came out. So that's sort of my rankings process, a little peek behind the curtain. All right, guys, that was a fun discussion. I like respectful disagreements, boys, and that's why we do it this way, so that we all come at it from different angles. So this was a good discussion. Thanks for making your case as well. I appreciate it.
Well, I know we always give each other crap, but I love you guys, and I'm proud to be part of this team. And everybody listening, I think you guys know that, but we razz each other all the time. But seriously, it's all because we're all competitive, but we're guys that talk outside of work like all the time. So I love doing a podcast with you guys.
Yeah, me too. I've enjoyed it. All right, now let's welcome in Dr. David Chow. As I mentioned earlier, if you follow the NFL and you have Twitter, you have almost certainly seen his work. He provides instant injury analysis just from video, and he's incredibly accurate at doing so. You can find him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Dr. Chow, thank you for joining us from vacation, no less. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. You guys are the best. It's my pleasure to be on. And yeah, that video thing isn't a carny trick. I mean, I looked at video when I saw a player on the field, on the sideline, in the locker room, and after an MRI the next day, before I would talk to the GM, the video guys would pull up video from the injury from the day before, and I could reverse engineer it. And so that's, I think, how I fell into doing this.
Yeah, I followed you on Twitter for years, you know, and you have an immediate sort of thing, and you're great because also, you know, I know you're always in the middle of doing something, you know what I mean? You might be at your daughter's birthday party or something like that. You'd be like, okay, I didn't see it. Somebody send me some video, and you immediately come up with that diagnosis. It's impressive. And you're a must follow for anybody who is sort of, you know, looking for that immediate sort of initial diagnosis, which of course can't do it with 100% accuracy based on video, but it is really impressive.
Thank you so much. But one of the things I learned or figured out, it's always better and quite honestly easier to be real and say, look, this is what it is. You know, A, I don't know for sure. It's just video. B, there may be a daughter's dance recital or something, you know, life goes on. So thank you for noting that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm missing my son's birthday party right now. I'm just kidding. No, okay. Let's jump into it. Let's talk about Deebo Samuel. You know, he suffers the Jones fracture in his right foot in mid-June. The time frames I've seen all over the place, 10 weeks, 16 weeks. The 49ers recently posted a video, but just of him sprinting. When do you think that we can see him back? Do you think even when he does come back, will he be at full strength from the time he returns? Or is this something that's just going to linger all year?
Well, certainly I haven't seen his x-rays. I didn't do a surgery. It is a Jones fracture, fifth metatarsal stress type fracture, but there are different kinds and different varieties. So there are different recovery timelines. But all along, from the minute it happened, and if you followed on Twitter, like you've seen that, I've been pessimistic about him being ready for week one. Is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. The problem is if you try and push too hard from Jones fracture, there's a high rate of recurrence and further fracture. You can almost call this a wide receiver fracture. A lot of wide receivers have had it, dozens of big name wide receivers. And many of those wide receivers, when they do push back quickly, have needed a second surgery, including Julio Jones, no relation to the Jones fracture, Sammy Watkins, Julian Edelman, Dez Bryant, just to name a few. Those are people that did not just have one Jones fracture, but needed a second surgery. My thought process all along is that the 49ers are going to give Deebo Samuel a good chance to get fully healthy. I anticipate potentially the PUP extending to the first 6 weeks of the regular season and then coming back strong. Obviously, San Francisco, a Super Bowl team last year, I mean, they'll find a way to survive without him. And the worst thing that can happen is rushing Deebo Samuel back and having a problem, midway through the season and now not having him when you really need him. So that's part of the conservatism that I see. There's no question I've seen some video of him running and doing some drills. But let me tell you, running straight ahead is not the issue for a Jones fracture. It's planting and cutting and side to side. And don't see him doing that. Even in the running video, to me, to the naked eye, there's a slight hitch in the gait. There's no question he can run laps around me in any race, right? But for as elite as these guys are, I didn't see him at 100% yet. So I haven't seen anything to change my mind yet that early season he's either going to stay on PUP or not necessarily be exposed to a lot of usage early on, just because he's more important to them later on.
Yeah, Dr. Chow, I appreciate the insight there. That's fantastic stuff. I want to ask you too, like on top of the you know, coming back physically and being able to overcome that, isn't there like a psychological portion for these players as well?
No question, for every athlete, you know, and the psychological side of it is big. confidence to make that one plant cut and whatever, confidence after an ACL tear. And the psychological part is such a big component, since you brought up judging by video. I'll give you and your listeners a clue. I never judge the severity of an injury by the player slamming his helmet or reacting. He could just be upset about something like, shoot, I wanted to finish this game. This may be a very mild hamstring, but I still just wanted to finish this game. It doesn't mean that his season is over. I judge the injury video, not the reaction to the injury. And that's where, once again, is the emotional side that you bring up and the mental side.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. And that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because obviously I'm not a doctor. My wife is a nurse, so she tries to help me through this stuff. But having you on the show is going to be like the totally next level of someone that used to be on an NFL sideline. And moving forward to someone like Alex Smith, okay, he's been out of the game for quite some time dealing with this leg injury. And I happened to see that E60 special on him, and it was I feel for Alex Smith. I mean, I really wish nothing for the best for him. I want to see him back on a football field. It's unfortunate that there's not going to be fans standing up, you know, cheering him on when he comes back on the field. But I would assume that the players do when that eventually happens. But, you know, he's been cleared for football activities. Do you think that he's someone that will actually be able to play football right away? Do you think there's a chance that he wins this job? Or is it more like he's got to really take it slow considering all he's been through?
Well, somewhere in between there. First of all, everyone's rooting for Alex Smith, right? I mean, he's a San Diego kid, Helix High. For those of you who don't know, he was in the same backfield with Reggie Bush at Helix High. But in any case, I don't personally know him, but, you know, a big fan of him. Everyone speaks highly of him. And look, I don't care if he doesn't take a live snap in a real NFL game this year. Just name him the comeback player of the year already, please. I mean, there's just no bigger comeback. As great as that is, and if you want to go to outkick.com, that's where all the articles are. I do write an article explaining in detail why Alex Smith may be back on the football field, but there is no way he is anywhere near 100%. I'm not hating on the guy. I'm rooting for him. But if you saw that Project 11, you saw how bad the infection was. And the doctors in the report, the ES report says he lost a lot of muscle. You saw his naked tibia bone with no skin or muscle covering it. That's all dead necrotic tissue. He had at least part of his calf muscle transferred to the front of his leg to cover the bone to prevent further infection. He had some of his quad muscle transferred. So on that right side, he's lost some quad muscle. He's lost almost all of his anterior compartment. He's lost a good portion of his calf, which is why when you see that video, as wonderful as it was that his wife posted of him making the regular roster, passing his physical in his driveway when the kids were spraying him, you see how that ankle flops and he has to hike his leg. He's got a foot drop. He doesn't have full ankle control. Now, when you see him on the football field, it's always in an AFO, ankle foot orthosis brace, to stabilize it. And with that, I have to admit, and everyone has to admit, he looks pretty good. But is he himself? No possible way. Can he run away from Aaron Donald? I'm not sure anyone can when they're fully healthy, but he's now going to be a little bit slower. On the good news side, is he more mobile probably than Dan Marino late in his career with 1 foot back out, you know, from under center to try and get out after his Achilles injury? Yeah, probably. And as much as I love my good friend Philip Rivers now in Indianapolis, I probably would pick Alex Smith in a foot race over Philip Rivers. But, you know, is that Alex's game and can he do that? If you're expecting the exact same Alex Smith dynamic and athletic as before, you're kidding yourself. But can he play quarterback with his mind and his arm and do things in a different way and surprise some people? I hope so. But I think the reality is that starting battle is between Dwayne Haskins and Kyle Allen, who Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, their offensive coordinator, know well from Carolina. And Alex Smith is going to be owed $16 or $17 million, whether he makes the team or not. Who better to have as a veteran coach on the field and the third QB, right, than Alex Smith? So I think he makes the 53, but I don't see him taking regular snaps and starter snaps outside of injury above. But I'd love to see it happen, but I just don't see it happening.
I think we're certainly all rooting for him, as we are for Tua Tagovailoa. He's obviously coming off a major hip injury. We know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is almost certainly going to start the year as the quarterback. But from a health perspective, when do you think Tua is going to be back to full strength, or is he already there and it's really just a matter of him finding the time to develop in the NFL?
Well, I hope you don't find my answers too picky, but I try to answer things very specifically and very carefully. When will Tua be full? You could say now and you could say never. Let me explain that. Never, because a hip fracture dislocation is pretty significant. I don't know that you can say he can gain 100% of what he was. 95? Yes. 95% of Tua's pretty darn good. And I think he's at least there. But, you know, anytime you have that, it's like a car that's in a car accident. Will you ever have a brand new car again? No. But that doesn't mean you can't drive the car and do very well with the car. And that's the case with Tua. On the other hand, the reason I say now is he's ready to start now, week one. And, you know, when way back when this happened and at the time of the draft, I said that he would still, if he was the top pick in the draft before this hip injury, he should still be in the top 10 of the draft after this injury. Long term, there's some question on his hip, but short term, I think he's fine. I've said all along he will be able to physically start week one. And that is what is being said right now out of Miami. But mentally, and this is not a shot at Tua, it's just the transition to the NFL is hard for any college player, especially at the quarterback position, but especially this year in the pandemic when you don't really have the off-season program to get used to things. And that is absolutely why I've expected all along my guy, my Harvard guy, Ryan Fitzpatrick, will be the starter at week one. The question is, how long does he give the job? Week four, week eight, week 12? I don't know.
Yeah.
And so real quick, because I know we're definitely running out of time. We appreciate the time on vacation that you have here. But if you ever listen to our show, people know, they say, find someone that loves you as much as Mike loves AJ Green. I'm a huge AJ Green fan, and it was unfortunate what happened last year, and it seemed like he had a healthy offseason. However, he has this hamstring come down. You know, they say it's a mild hamstring injury. I don't really know what that means. I think a hamstring strain is probably, it's a strain. And obviously it's got to be taken care of. Tyreek Hill, the same thing. If someone's drafting this weekend, you know, the NFL is still 3 weeks away from today. That's when the season kicks off. Are you lowering these guys down draft boards because of this? Is there any lingering effects that you'd be worried about?
You know, obviously I haven't examined any of those players and there's not video, but in my preseason injury preview that'll be released shortly here at profootballdoc.com, for people who are drafting, I wouldn't be downgrading them really on this mild hamstring. Look, if you're an absolute tie between AJ Green and, who knows, Mike Evans on your board, and Mike Evans is healthy and AJ Green's coming off his hamstring, and based on that, splitting hairs go the other way, that's fine. But I wouldn't stay away from AJ Green from this. I fully realize there are a lot of people that are going to stay away from AJ Green because of some of the history and where last year he didn't make it back. But I think I'm not worried about that high ankle from last year. And even with the ankle scope, I think some of that time off was just, you know, the team's record and contractual situation. I'm not a big fantasy player. I've always said that. And this year is actually, I entered my first real fantasy competition. Lucky enough to be invited to the Scott Fish Bowl, which is crazy because that's like never attending an NFL game. And the first one you go to is a Super Bowl, right? So I don't purport myself to be a fantasy expert, but medically speaking, I would not have much worry about AJ Green.
We are new best friends. That's all I can say.
If we had video right now, I'm sure there'd be just massive fist pumps from Tags as he likes to hear that news.
There is 100%.
All right, so let's finish up on this, Dr. Chow. I know you've closely followed how the NFL is handling COVID-19 concerns. I guess just talk a little bit about the types of precautions that the NFL is taking, what you're expecting to see this football season, and how things are going to be different.
It's really coming together as I thought. Back in March, I've been saying I expect football to start and start on time. I was more confident in that than its ability to finish the season, be it a second wave or what have you. And I don't think that has changed. With that being said, let me tell you why all your listeners should go ahead and set your dates for the fantasy draft. There will be a season. Now, is it going to be normal? Is it going to finish, you know, without a glitch? Nobody can say that. It's a season of a lot of change. There's three main reasons I've been saying, and there's another article at OutKick. I'm not trying to promote it. I'm just trying to say if people want to hear the full details. There's three main reasons why the NFL will play this season and play on time. Number one, you couldn't get any luckier in terms of market timing. If this were if we could be so lucky in our lives in real estate or the stock market, we'd all be rich and retired. This COVID thing started right, really hit a crescendo right after the Super Bowl. The NFL has had the longest lead time and the most time to prepare, where other sports have really been hit hard by this. Number two, the NFL plays things close to the vest. And if you think back a month ago, there was a lot more doubt on what the NFL, if the NFL could play. Players were tweeting, I don't know what's going on, right? You remember that? And John Harbaugh was saying this is humanly impossible. And Sean McVay says, I don't know how we're going to be able to do this. And what's Sean McVay saying now in Hard Knocks? He's got a program. He sees it. He's following it. And he's confident. John Harbaugh is confident. The players have stopped their criticism once they got rid of the preseason games, which they didn't want, kind of thing. And yes, the testing protocols that are going on are good. And let me tell you, it is less likely to get COVID on the field on Sunday than on the bus ride over or the hotel room or the airplane or the locker room or on the sidelines. Less likely to get it on Sunday than in the 6 days of the week in the facility with the meetings and everything else. And quite honestly, less likely in the facility than to get it out in the community, which is why in an unprecedented move, unions don't take money out of the hands and mouths of their members. The union has agreed, the NFLPA agreed to make COVID potentially a non-football injury. Everywhere else in this country, if you get COVID and you've been working, you can claim it as work comp. In the NFL, you could potentially not be paid for it because the union voluntarily gave up that ability by saying if the team could prove or show that a player has been out and about having parties or not social distancing or at a bar, they could put them and make them non-football injury. Why did the union do that? Because they see that 80 or 90% of their members want there to be a season, and this is how to ensure that safety. So they're willing to potentially penalize some outliers if they don't listen. You look at all the veterans telling the rookies, hey, you better, you know, stay in line. And finally, and I'm sorry I'm so long-winded here, maybe you shouldn't catch me on vacation, is that the NFL and NFL and the players are actually aligned because of the salary cap and the revenue sharing, okay? If there is no NFL season this year, the revenue, the salary cap next year plummets to almost nothing. I get it. They'll smooth out the peanut butter. Instead of $200 million, dropping to 25 million. They'll say 200 million, 150 this year, 150 next year, 150 the year after that.
Yeah, wasn't it 3 years they agreed to? I think that was the agreement.
And spread it out. But here's the problem with that, by spreading it out. First of all, how long are the current players' careers, right? I mean, a lot of their money is now going to be less. New contracts are going to be less. When you sign a new contract, a current contract, it's usually escalating because teams are expecting the salary cap to go up. If it goes the other way, it creates a lot of cap issues, a lot of cap casualties, and there will be a lot of that. For example, GMs will say 17% of the cap is what you should pay for a franchise quarterback. $200 million salary cap. It's not an accident that Russell Wilson makes $35 million. It's not an accident that Big Ben makes $34 million. That's kind of a number. But if the salary cap becomes $150 million, I would think Russell Wilson's still safe, but the Seahawks will have to cut a lot of other players. But is Big Ben safe if the salary cap is $150 million, given his age and coming off the elbow at $34 million? His contract might have to be restructured, and new contracts won't be as lucrative. So you're taking money out of their mouths for years to come if you don't play this year. The players and the owners are aligned. And that's another reason why I believe there will be a season. So anyone listening who believes this, set your fantasy draft, be it by Zoom or outdoors, socially distanced way. There will be a season.
Well, this has all been fantastic, honestly. And you apologize for being long-winded. Please do not be ridiculous. It was great. It was fantastic information on everything we asked. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of vacation. I really look forward to chatting with you every Friday during the season. Just remind everybody where they can find more of you and your work.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter at profootballdoc.com. We have the injury index, field views. Great stuff for you to figure out day to day, who week to week, who to play in fantasy or DFS, or if you're interstate with legal wagering. And then all the written articles and the podcast will be at outkick.com.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your vacation, and I look forward to chatting with you more during the season.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to the sponsors of today's show, Pristine Auction. Just go to pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Look around. You're going to find something that you like at one of their thousands of daily auctions. And don't forget to use the code FANTASYPROS in the registration field for a $5 voucher. And also the FanDuel Sports are back. Fantasy football is a coming. New users can get a free contest every week or match 20% of their first deposit up to $500. Just go to FanDuel.com/FANTASYPROS or download the app. Also, we've got that monster giveaway going on where you can win a signed Davante Adams helmet, a $200 gift card for Pristine Auction, a $200 gift card for Porter Road Butcher, a package of fantasy football goods for your league's champion and your last place loser from Trophy Smack, a 1 month subscription to Fubo TV, and a bonus prize for our YouTube subscribers that includes a Zoom call with a fantasy analyst. To enter, just leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts, take a screenshot of that review, and then also take a screenshot showing that you subscribe to our YouTube channel to qualify for the bonus prize, and send those to contest@fantasypros.com. And you can head over to fantasypros.com/contest for more details. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to be back at it next week with some great episodes. We'll catch you then. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.